Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we're joined by Harry Duran, a podcast strategist who empowers heart-led business owners to amplify their authority through done-for-you podcast launch and marketing services. As the founder of Fullcast, Harry helps mission-driven entrepreneurs share their message without the hassle of handling production. He believes in allowing clients to focus on their strengths while his team handles everything from launch to promotion, ensuring consistent quality content. Known for his personalized approach, Harry's mission is to elevate voices that inspire change and transformation. Whether you're a healer, coach, or entrepreneur, Harry's goal is to guide you every step of the way, making podcasting simple and impactful. I've asked him to join us here today so we can all learn how to do more with podcasting as this medium and learn from Harry's insights and stories. So, Harry, thank you so much for joining us. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Daryl. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, appreciate having you here. Before we get into this, how did you even get started? Have you been in the sort of this medium forever? Were your parents like radio hosts or something, and you grew up in the industry, and this is just you carrying the torch through the next generation, or
Considering I was born in El Salvador, that's probably not what
probably
happened.
not what happened? Okay, fair
No,
enough.
no, no. Yeah, but I was—I think my one of my earliest passions growing up just outside New York City was a DJ. So I still a passion of mine. I love house music. I still have my turntables here in the
Two
office.
turntables and a microphone. Sorry.
Exactly, old school and vinyl. So analog still rules. So
Right.
at the time I was working on a mobile app called Know Your DJ with a friend of mine, and this was late 2013. And I said I'm going to start a podcast so I could promote the app. So I went to a new media Expo conference in Las Vegas in 2014. I saw Pat Flynn there, Amy Porterfield, all these OG podcasters, and I decided to change gears and I said, let me interview podcasters instead of DJs because DJs are so hard to find. They're traveling the globe and you'll probably never be able to like get them down for an interview. And so I shifted gears. I called the show Podcast Junkies, and this year I celebrated the 10-year anniversary of the show. Since then, I've interviewed over 350 folks in the podcasting space. And it's opened up the doors for me within the podcasting community. In 2015, I hired a business coach, and I realized as I was leaving my 9-to-5 job that I needed something new for employment. And I figured out that I didn't learn much about digital marketing in my 9-to-5 or in college. So I had to figure out what I call digital Narnia and jumped into the deep end. And I realized I had to get in the room with these other six-figure, seven-figure business owners because that was completely new for me. There's that Jim Rohn quote, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And I
Right.
clearly had to change my circle there. And so once I was in that group, I came up with the concept for a done-for-you service because I realized all these people were paying this coach $1,500 a month to be coached by him. And they understood opportunity costs. They understood what a time what their an hour of their time is worth. And that's how I created a done-for-you service. So all that stuff that I learned with my first show, I did all the editing, I did all the marketing. I bought the t-shirts. I went to the conferences. I interviewed the guests. I wrote the show notes. I did the graphics. And I realized, hey, business owners don't want to do this. They'd rather have someone do this for them. They just want to show up and record. And that's how the offer was created. And since 2015, we've launched over 120 shows for our clients.
Wow. So it was just, it sounds like the path was so linear and straight and just nothing but forward momentum and progress. It was just, you just picked this path and the pearly gates opened up and there was angels and cherubs and harps and music and
I
money
think
flew out
that's
of
a
the sky.
different path you're thinking of, but definitely there was definitely a lot of prayers on the way because as anyone who's been an entrepreneur knows, it's definitely not a linear path and there's a lot of falling down and getting right back up. You learn to deal with adversity and d building a relationship with failure as an entrepreneur, and you realized failure is just one more thing that didn't work, and you just have to get up faster, dust yourself off, and try the next thing. And I think that's been the most important thing for my journey because let me tell you, Daryl, there was a lot of things that did not work, a lot of programs I tried, a lot of marketing attempts that didn't work. And over time, clients that I ended up not wanting to work with, clients that ended up leaving, and just a lot of ups and downs. But you have to make your own path and you have to learn the basics of marketing, of sales, of lead generation, of all these things that you don't understand in the beginning as an entrepreneur because you're just trying to make that first dollar. But then you realize if you are going to build a business, it's going to have a lasting effect and have some staying power, you really have to round out your knowledge and your skill set with these other things that you just basically have to learn on your own.
Yeah. I love that. It's very much like a single player game. And I always tell I talk to my team and my wife and I, we talk about how a lot of business owners, they suffer in silence, that a lot of them are living quiet lives of desperation. Because when things aren't going well, what are you going to do? You're going to ask your staff. They don't understand your point of view. You're going to go ask your competitor. If you run a dry cleaner, you run a dry cleaner neighborhood, you're going to go to your competitor and be like, hey, things are slow. What are you doing? They're not going to help you. And you don't want to go and confess because you've got this reputation and maybe an image. If you run like a really nice one, maybe the nicest restaurant in the city, you can't go let people know that you're struggling. So it's this weird cat and mouse game of trying to figure out what works and what doesn't. So I agree with that 100%. My buddy and I used to always say, as long as you've got roof and ramen, it's all a game. As long as you got a roof over your head and some hot noodles to fill your belly, it's just a game after that. And I think that's really good. I think a really valuable thing for a lot of business owners is get yourself 6 months of runway stacked up. Whenever you
Yeah, for
have cash
sure.
coming through the door, stack up 6 months of cash. Make that a top priority because then you can play the game. And it takes
Yeah.
some of the venom out of failure, I think, is a big,
Yeah, absolutely. I
if you're
agree.
one failure away from living under a bridge, it's a very stressful scenario. So I think it's great tips. What were some of the biggest challenges for you, and how did you overcome them?
I think early on, what was interesting for me is throughout my journey, I've always followed people's voices. If I think way back to even my dad, he would play these, and I'm dating myself, he would play these vinyl records of these inspirational speakers like Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich, or The Richest Man in Babylon. These are classics that later on, as an entrepreneur, I'm like, oh yeah, I probably should have paid attention back then. But even in my corporate life, I ended up, following the voices of what I called my corporate godfather. I worked at a bank when I first got started in as a teller, and then I kept making my way up the ranks, and he would promote me, and I would leave, and he would get me a new position, or I would try something in the dot-com space. That was another voice I was following. 1999, tried a dot-com thing. That didn't work out. Came back to my corporate godfather. I said, by the way, I need a job again. So he hooked me up again. But then later on, after year 2000, I had a half brother that lived in Atlanta. So I said, hey, and in construction of all things. So this is a huge detour because I was working in business in the bank. I went to go Atlanta for 2 years, hard hat, boots, climbing scaffolds, and I learned how to do takeoffs of like blueprints because that's how you get deals and that's how you win bids. And so I had to get up to speed real quick. So I've always been a really quick learner, but you know what they say about working with family. After 2 years, like I returned back to New York with my tail between my legs, and was living with my parents at the age of 34. And I had a ticket to Thailand because a year before I had met a friend in Amsterdam. He's anytime you want to come, you should come. And so I was like, I have the ticket. I don't have a job. So at least I can go have a nice New Year's. So I go out to Thailand, beautiful country. Everything was gorgeous there. He took me on a moped ride and we went up to this mountain trail. And he's, oh, we're going to see these waterfalls. So he's, okay, let's go to the top of this waterfall. So we hike up there and he's standing on the ledge and he's looking over the valley and he's, come over to where I am. It's a great view here. So I said, sure. I walked over there, but there's a little stream on my feet, and you're not thinking about this in the moment. I was barefoot. I stepped on it. It was so slippery that both my legs went up in the air. I landed on my back and proceeded to be carried like over the edge of the waterfall. Mind you, Daryl,
What?
this is happening within seconds, and I'm just like, your life is flashing before you. I'm like, I'm in Thailand. This is not going to end well. Like, even if I survived, I would just be like somewhere in the mountains of Thailand. Out of the corner of my eye, there's a boulder on the bank. Instinctually, I stick out my left foot and I place my foot against the boulder and I stop myself from going over. And my friend is looking at me. His eyes are like wide as saucers. And he pulls me over to the side. I'm shaking. He's shaking. We shake it off. We're able to have a good day, great week. Ended up being a fantastic trip. And then I get back to New York. And you don't think about this stuff later because it's not like I had an aha moment as I was going over the
Right.
waterfall. But later on, I was like, what a shame it would have been if I had died with my voice inside me.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, there's a story that needs to be told. And it's taken a long time. And I've worked with coaches to refine that story and really think about this. But it's really something that I want your viewers and your listeners to really contemplate, because I believe everyone that's watching and listening right now has a unique story that needs to be told. I firmly believe, I'm a spiritual person, I believe we're on this planet to share our journey, the ups, the downs, the highs, the lows. And so whether you think your story is valuable or not is really not up to you to decide. You need to share it. We're just all learning. I'm learning from people who are like maybe one or two rungs above me on a ladder. And I'm teaching people who are one or two rungs above me below, because I'm just sharing as I grow, I learn what I grow along the way. And that's why I share it in my weekly newsletter, A Life Worth Living. And I just share all the stories because I've gotten feedback over the years how people are resonating, whether I share a failure to happen business, I have like neurodivergence and semi ADHD, and just thinking through all these things that people don't talk about. I went through a divorce. I had a dark night of the soul as I went through that, but it's all these things that make me who I am. Mm-hmm. And so you talk about like the highs and the lows and challenges. There's been a lot. There's been personal ones. There's been business ones for sure. And I think over the years, you just learn how to be more resilient, but also not to hide the stories that are not so nice to share, because people are going through something like that. People are struggling right now. After COVID, we saw what happened. People are just about, there's like a lot of loneliness out there and people don't have connections to make. And last year I had a transformational experience with a men's group. It's like 40 men getting together, opening up their hearts, crying together, and really sharing things that they don't feel comfortable sharing in the real world, because they have to put up this front.
Right.
Their wives, to their partners, to show them that, hey, I'm strong, I've got the family in together. But like that weighs down on people and weighs down on men. And so little things like that have happened over the years, I've shared that experience. So it's not when what people see on the socials and on the LinkedIn is your best self. But I think it's also important to have an outlet to share the ups and the downs. And I'm glad you're providing that outlet in this show as well, because it's important to tell those stories.
Yeah, I think that podcasts are more important than ever, because especially with all the censorship that's going on. Like this just happened today. I shared something about fluoride and I wasn't saying it was good or bad, but there's recently been an important court case that's highlighted the need for deeper investigation because there's real harms from fluoride in water. And I post on Facebook and then they're like, this is out of context. It's been marked as disinformation. Like, in this age where people can't have conversations about stuff, I feel that unedited, uncensored, human-to-human conversations that people can listen to is more important than ever. And I think authenticity is really, people are hungry for authenticity. And on this world of filter photographs and catfishing and, you know, like you said, social media, putting your best foot forward. So I think that's really powerful. You mentioned about how we're all here to live a journey, to share our story, to learn and to tell our story. Alan Watts has this great talk. I love it. He calls it the dream of life. And he talks about how, imagine if every night you went to sleep, you could dream 100 years of life, or however many years of life you wanted to dream. And in the beginning, you would have the most lavish, luxurious lifestyles, right? You'd have all the pleasures of the world and you'd live and you'd wake up, you go, oh, that was great. And you do it again and again and again and again. But after a while you get bored. And then you want to say, I want to go to sleep and dream. And I want some excitement. I want some adventure. I want some challenges. And then you'd wake up and be like, whoa, that was a close call. And then eventually you would go, tonight when I go to dream, and I dream these 100+, whatever, how many years of life I want to live, I don't want to know that I'm dreaming, and I'll wake up and it'll be okay. And in the infinite possibilities of the world, you could dream the life that you're living today. And I think that's just a really powerful, I love that talk. I love that. And it comes back to trying to, I guess this leads into my next question, but it's almost like if you have kids, you want to make it a safe space for them to play and fall down and learn lessons in, but not die. So what would you recommend to people that are starting out and struggling?
It's important to have someone to speak to. And it happens on different levels, because if you're struggling with mental issues, then you need to seek professional help. If you're struggling with loneliness, then you need to look for community. If you're struggling in business, then you should probably get a mentor. You need to figure out where you're at, and you can't solve a problem with the same energy that created it in the first place, right? You have to I don't know if it's wrongly attributed to Einstein, but the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result.
Right.
You need to, I've come back to that Jim Rohn quote, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Mm. So if you take, and I've seen this extrapolated out to everything, look at your average, your five closest friends, the average of that of the health of that circle is probably like your health. Or look at the income of your closest five friends. The average of that income is probably your income. Like the average of their influence is probably the average of what you have. And so you have to continuously push yourself out of your comfort zone and decide, what you want your life to look like, even a year from now. Sometimes I've had the longest time challenges with like goal setting, but it's really picturing it as an alternative timeline in the future that already exists. And you just have to mentally put yourself there and saying, what would I feel like if I was a person that blank? And you have to start wherever you're at. You have to give grace for where you're at and whatever decisions you've made to get to the point that you're at. Forgive yourself. Write a note to yourself. I forgive myself for making this decision because I spent my inheritance and now we're destitute and broke. Whatever the extreme is, or like I made bad choices with my health and now I have problems and I need to go to the see doctor often. Acknowledge what you did to get to this point, because if you pretend it didn't happen, or if you pretend that wasn't your fault, then you're not going to have that
Learn.
self-awareness to realize that you're in control of your own destiny.
Yeah, I think that's such a powerful tip to not have a victim mentality. I forget what how it was. I'm going to get it wrong, but I saw this quote recently. It said, "You have everything you need. The universe has given you everything you need. That's it. You've got everything that you could possibly want and need to achieve your goals right now. Like the universe has provided it. It's just you have to go. You have to put the pieces together, and that's the game. But you could point fingers. I wasn't born in this country, or blah 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 blah. I'm too short. I'm too whatever. But you can still go out there and make what you want in the world. And I think that's a really powerful
And you
message.
have to have a good enough reason. It's in the entrepreneurial world, it's the cliche of Simon Sinek's why, but why do you want what it is that you want? Like if it's money, most people want the money because they don't want the money. They want the freedom that comes with money. If they want the house, maybe because they want security, because maybe they didn't have one growing up. So it's like really thinking about, as a podcast interviewer, I've done over 500 interviews on both my shows, and I've just become really curious in my conversations. When people mention something, I'm like, oh, why do you think that? And I've heard if you want to get to the root cause of something, it's called the five whys. You just keep asking why, because you'll give me an answer and I'll be like, that's interesting, Daryl, but why do you think that? Oh, because I was raised by my parents this way. Why were you raised that way? Oh, because we were living in this house and was poor. And why do you think you were living in that house? And then you start peeling it back and back, just as an example, and you'll start to get to some root cause stuff that, and seek help. I mentioned going to a men's circle. I've also done therapy. Like I've these all things that are you have to do to figure out where you need help and have these conversations with people who are qualified to help you if you need to.
I think that's great advice. I really appreciate that. What are some specific skills and behaviors that you think are important to succeed as an entrepreneur or a podcaster?
Definitely resiliency. And I think it's important to understand that no one's coming to save you. Yes. So you have to understand what you're getting into. And if you're someone who values security, who needs to have the reassurance of having that paycheck. But at the end of the day, as much as people like to think a 9 to 5
Yeah, it's not secure. It's
is
terrible.
secure, it's not. I learned the hard way. And even though I had a great career and I was 20 plus years in corporate marketing and I had a great boss and a lot of great managers, towards the end is I saw the writing on the wall. So if you are looking to become an entrepreneur, do your homework and get help from people that have been there before. Work with a coach so you understand how to set up a company properly and what's the difference between an S corp and an LLC and how to set aside your taxes. And maybe you need to read Profit First by Michael McCallowitz or something like that to understand how
That's a good book.
to manage your finances. Get in a social circle with other entrepreneurs. Figure out what you want to do. What are you best in the world at? Like, what's your unique skill set? Like, work with coaches who can help you refine that and then start to figure out what you need to do to start showing that value to prospective clients or people you want to work with. And then decide how big you want to be. Are you comfortable being a solopreneur or do you want to build a team? And if you want to build a team, as I'm sure you can relate to, you still have to start documenting your processes. We have SOPs for everything we do. And it's one of the reasons I've been able to grow my agency. But if you're not thinking about working with teams and you want to, if you're going to continuously work in the business as opposed to working on it, thinking high level vision of like marketing, sales, what I want to do, like where I want this business to be, who do I need to eventually hire? Those are bigger picture things. But in the beginning, you're going to have to do all those things yourself. And so just realize what you're signing up for. I'm not saying like this to discourage anyone, but I'm just being realistic and letting people know that if you are going to do it, there's people who have done it before you. Learn from them. Don't make the mistakes they've done, and find people who you admire in the space and who have a clearly demonstrated track record of success. That's how you get a leg up and start off on the right foot.
Yeah, I love that. You actually, so I've been working with Michael Gerber for about a year now, being my team and I doing back office, back end automation. He calls it the three-legged stool: lead gen, lead conversion, client fulfillment, which is working on, not in, the documentation process. And I think that's such a good, you mentioned some other, so just for people that missed it, read the E-Myth, which is work on. He's the guy that coined the term work on, not in your business. Okay. So the E-Myth is a must read. Richest Man in Babylon, must read. Profit First. I love that idea. You talk about Jim Rohn. I love Jim Rohn. I actually met Darren Hardy, who owns all of Jim's IP, and he gave me his favorite CD set out of his car. It was like this ratted thing that had been used. He's because I we met on a mutual birthday friend's birthday, and Jim Rohn's got the 70, 10, 10, 10 plan, where you live on 70% of what you make, and 10% goes to active capital. You spend it to actively get training or to actively grow it. 10% on passive, where you actively try to invest it somewhere where it'll grow and come back to you. And the last 10% is tithing for charity. You give it away. The 70, 10 to 10. Profit First is the business version of that. So
Yeah,
that's,
basically.
yeah, I highly recommend people read those. Those are great tips. I think that's just fantastic advice. And I want to go back to one thing you talked about, the why. I know that, and this kind of ties into what I was saying, how working with Michael for the past year, I've really learned that is a lot, a real missing ingredient for a lot of people, and that they're in it for the wrong reasons, and it just stinks to high heaven. It's like going on a date with someone, like a girl going on a date that's just there for the free meal. Like you can just tell that she's not interested in what you're interested in. And when customers come to a business, they typically have a problem they want to have solved, and they could just feel that the business owner is just not doesn't care about their pro or the staff or whatever. And so really connecting to that why. That ikigai. And when you invite a friend to see a movie, it's not about the money. You don't go, "Hey, do you got 20 bucks? Hey, man, you want to do something Friday night? Do you have plans?" Problem. "No, I don't have plans Friday night." Cool. Let's call so and so and so. Let's get a group together. Let's go do something together. This movie's there. You want to go check it out? And then we can do this after. And there's a budget required to do that, but it's about the thing and the energy and the enthusiasm and that. And so when someone comes to your business and they're like, "Hey, I've got this, I've got prom, I've got whatever, I want my hair done." And the business owner, you're just client 300. They
Of
feel that.
course.
And so that why I think is a really important thing. That's anyway. So I just, it's something that's really jumped out to me in working with Michael is that for him, he's been helping for over 50 years. He's been helping small businesses succeed. And you can go, "Hey, here's a bunch of templates to copy and blank, fill in the paste, copy and paste." But like you've probably learned, like people have a story and a voice inside them, and it's, you just can't fake that. I think that's really powerful. Are there habits that you think are critical, like weekly habits, daily habits that you think are mission critical as an entrepreneur?
Absolutely. I definitely think that it's important to have a morning routine. And for everyone else, and for most people, this could be something that's not the same all the time, but something that helps you move your body is important. As I just celebrated my 54th birthday, and so I'm consciously aware as I get older that I need to take care of myself. So Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I do strength training, and thankfully I have a home gym, but also that helps the keep the body fit. But then if you think about the energy required to be an entrepreneur and how on point you have to be and how you have to be present for conversations like this, for conversations with your team, for conversations with your clients, with prospects, you have to really be careful with how you manage your energy. And I think it's important to understand that there's a lot of things that could affect that. And I take supplements, I do affirmations and intentions in the morning, like all things like that, that I think are important for me to understand how I can affect my day and how you're going to start your day. So, like, first thing in the morning, I'll do some journaling and I'll write some intentions out. And then I'll make sure that I'm thinking through the day. And obviously, there's so many things, only so many things you can get done in a day. So typically, you pick your top three, and people get overwhelmed. And I try to, over the years, I'm a big fan of productivity systems. I've done Tiago Forte's Power Method to figure out everything that's in my offline brain, which is very helpful. But have a system. If you're a person like me that tends to like a lot of shiny objects and overthinks a lot, you need to have systems. Like when I read in my Kindle and I highlight and they those highlights get synced up to my Readwise. So every morning I go to my Readwise and I can see passages that I've highlighted over the years in my books. And it's a nice way to recall things that I want to retain that I'm reading. And so if I have a book that's recommended to me, I'll immediately drop it in Goodreads. Like, just have a system, because it just collects. And for me, it's the difference between just in time learning versus just in case learning.
Yeah, I love that. I use reminders. That's why I use my phone reminders. I set a reminder once a month, once a week, once a day, whatever. We talk about the passages and that you read. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting, I was like, hey, I do that. I highlight stuff and I'll be like, hey, remind me about this every 2 months on Monday. Hey, remind me about this every whatever, twice a year. Remind me about this every Monday.
It's a good thing to follow. The Readwise is interesting because you can pick how many updates you want to get in the day. So I get 12 updates and they're just like little snippets that I've highlighted. And so it's a nice recall method. And I just have part as part of my daily routine. But there's like, I have over the years, I have like just a bunch of things in my daily routine that are just either affirmations or intentions. And I'm always revisiting them and coming back to them and adjusting them as needed. So just having something that reminds you of your purpose and your goal, I think is really important to have those systems in place and to make time to connect too. Sometimes I'm guilty of spending too much time in front of a screen, and my partner will come and say, hey, you want to let the chickens out? Because we've got chickens now. So that's what you do when you live in the Midwest.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. I love it. So if we've got our day, we've got our mind, we've read Profit First and that, what are the top mistakes people are making with their podcasts? How are people failing to get the most from the time, energy, and effort they're investing in it?
Some of the most common mistakes are people are inconsistent with their episodes. When people first get started, they get really excited and they think, oh, I just have to put an episode up and I'll just record some random stuff occasionally. There's a lot of challenges with finding podcasts nowadays. There's like hundreds of thousands of active podcasts in a directory. And what's important is making sure you start out from the beginning with a concept for what you want to do with your show. And people just start recording and they don't really think about this too much. One of the first exercises we take clients through is naming your first 12 episodes. There's no tech involved here. It's a purely pen and paper. But what that does and why it's important is because that's one of the few fields for podcasting that's SEO friendly. So when people are looking at the content for podcasts, they're like, how to run a VA business effectively and write SOPs for your VA. Like, you see that almost exactly what's going to be covered in that episode. So as potential podcasters, think about this, look at the items that you're like the subject matter expert in. Where do you have thought leadership in a topic? Do you want to do a three-part series on accountability in the workplace? If you're a coach, you know, about trust issues. We had a leadership coach who coaches CEOs. She had three seasons of her podcast and it was on like teamwork and momentum and authenticity. And she would just take three or four episodes and do mini series on them. So really think through, like, number one, what is the content you want to share? Do you want to do solo? Do you want to do episodes? And then who is your ideal listener? It's very important. Like, when you have these episodes and you publish them, what's the one thing you want a listener to do as a result of having listened to your episode? Granted, you could have podcasts that are by comedians that are just meant to entertain people, but are you educating, but have an objective? Are you going to educate them? Are you going to entertain them? Are you going to let them know about something that they've never discovered? And then if you are educating them and you're informing them, is there a way for them to figure out how to work with you next? So many podcasters, especially business owners, they don't really think through their call to action. You've done all this great content and you provided so much value, but then there's no way for people to understand, hey, is this something that you do? Is this a business? Is that you have? Are you a coach? So they take the content and they move on to the next podcast. And so it's really, if you're making the investment to have someone help you with your podcast, really think through, plan your episodes, get professional recording gear. So if you see me with this microphone here, Daryl, I'm sure it sounds good. But the moment I move this microphone here, doesn't sound so good anymore. It's just little things like that, because in a podcast conversation, there's three people. There's the host, there's the guest, and then the listener. And it's listener singular. There's one person listening to this conversation as we're having it right now with their earbuds or their headphones on. And never lose sight of that. So I'm always conscious of that. I'll say, hey, Daryl, for the benefit of our listener, can you explain what that concept means? Or what's a VA? What's that stand for? These little things, and you're bringing them along the journey. They should feel like you're having a conversation in a bar and they just pulled up a stool and they're just like listening to you talk. And you always want to make them feel included. So little tips like that are really helpful for people to build this know and trust factor, because as people listen to you week in and week out, they realize that, hey, Harry knows a lot about podcasting. Hey, he just referenced a client he works with, so he probably does coaching. Oh, hey, he just offered up a lead magnet or a booking link to make time to chat with him at the end of this podcast episode. So you're doing this over time. The sales maximum, people need 7 to 10 touches before they actually will buy something. So it's that same concept with a podcast. Like you're building up that relationship with your listener, but you have to keep showing up. And that's why we talked about frequency being weekly, because you record once and then you're gone for a month. Most people have about 5 or 6 podcasts on rotation. That's about it. That's all they have time for. And so if you drop out of that rotation, guess what? There's a couple of 100,000 other shows that are just ready to take that space in them. So it's really prized real estate in the your listener's ear. If you can build those regular listeners up, those super fans, you definitely want to hold on to them.
And those are fantastic tips. I've been doing this for a while and I still wrote them all down because I think that their fundamentals are fundamental. I've learned in martial arts, having had a martial arts studio. The stuff that's really impressive is when you've got, you know, some of the best in the world being able to do stuff you learned your first month to people that have been doing it for 15 years. And there's one guy, I'm going to forget his name, but he's a Gracie. And Roger Gracie, everybody knows what he's going to do. He's going to judo through you, throw you. He's going to get to mount and he's going to gi choke you. And he just does it over and over again. And it's not like the guys don't know what's coming. Like they know what's coming and he just walks through and does it anyway. So excellent. A virtue is doing the common uncommonly well. So those are great.
I like
How
that.
do people get their first listeners? How do you grow the audience? So you've done this well, you've thought the content, okay, I'm going to release one a week. I know who my listener is. I know what I want them to do. Is it about SEO? Is it about paid ads? Is there a one
it's
trick?
No, there is no silver bullet. And a lot of people think there are. And there's actually like services that will, you can pay them money and they'll get you quote unquote downloads. But what's happening is they're gaming the system.
Boats. Yeah.
They'll get you a 3 second play. And a 3 second play will show up in your podcast host as a legitimate play. So you can get, we tested one of these. I got 15,000 listens for an episode. And then if you show that to an advertiser, they'll say, hey, you have 15,000 listens. We'll get you sponsorship for that. So you could totally see how this system could be gamed, but they're not genuine listeners.
Yeah.
We have clients that have less than 100 like listens per episode, but they're people that are dedicated to this content, and they're their ideal prospect, and so they keep coming back. And if you've got it targeted and dialed in, you can have a high ticket offer. And if people start to hear it, they're like, "Oh yeah, this is the person I need to work with." So it's not a matter of getting numbers. What you want to do is have your message so niche and so dialed in that you can either command high ticket pricing for your offer, or what I did with my second show, Vertical Farming Podcast. I wanted to learn about the industry. I wanted to be a visible show in the field. So I called it the most obvious name possible, Vertical Farming Podcast. Again, this is another tip from an SEO perspective.
Yep.
Don't make your guests and your listeners hunt down and try to figure out what this show is about. Hey, the two marketing martini dudes, cool, but I don't know, what am I going to listen to that for? To learn about drinking and martini and like marketing? Like, it's too generic. So what happened is this podcast became the number one podcast in the space. I interview CEOs and founders. So already the guest list is high profile. The show has generated over $100,000 in sponsorship revenue since I launched it in 2020. I've been flown to indoor farming conferences in Dubai. They flew me out there. They paid for my hotel and flight. There I met another conference organizer who the following year flew me out to a conference in Germany, and they paid for my flight and hotel because they saw that I had this visibility, zero visibility, mind you, in 2020. And now it's the number one show in the vertical farming industry. And just that goes to show you to really be thinking about this strategically. Who do I want to attract? Who do I want to be on the same stage with? Because I always call a podcast your stage. It's your virtual stage. Who do you want to bring onto your stage? And we all know if you're on LinkedIn, you say, hey, Daryl, can I pick your brain? Or can we grab some coffee? That's code for free consulting. But if I tell you, if I reach out to the CEO $200 million company and say, hey, I'm interviewing some of the most leading, groundbreaking CEOs in the world of vertical farming, and I've been following your posts here, and I think you're very inspirational. I think you'd be a great addition to my audience. You know, an hour of their time magically opens up, and now you're leveling the playing field. It's not, like, oh, I need help or I need free advice. It's no, we're on the same playing field. You'd be surprised, Daryl, how many of the CEOs come to my show, and I'm in the same place that you see me now, and they're more nervous than I am because they're just like, I've heard all your episodes. Everyone sounds so polished. And obviously that's a testament to what we do on the post-production side, but you're just really ensuring that, hey, I'm good. I'm in my wheelhouse and I'm comfortable hosting. So I feel comfortable in what I'm doing. I'm going to highlight you in your wheelhouse, and I'm just going to be naturally curious. I'm going to ask open-ended questions. I'm going to pull threads. And it's not about gotcha. I just want to shine you in the best light possible.
100%. And you need to vet your guests. That's an important one.
Yeah.
You do need to vet your guests, even if they have accolades in that. There's certain people that you don't want to give. I love that share a stage with. I recently turned down someone because they had a lot of ethical cases following them involving minors. And I was like, I don't care who this person is. I have no interest in sharing a stage with them. No, that's really mission critical. What do you see as the future of this industry? What's happening with podcasting? Is it going away anytime soon? Is this something people should be prepared for, all the AI podcasts that are going to come out with robot voices? Or where do you see things in 5, 10 years?
I think there's going to be a mix of both. On the vertical farming side, what happened is that I'm actually merged with a newsletter who's doing vertical farming, and now we're spinning off a new company called the AgTech Media Group, and we're raising funds for that. So it's pretty crazy, just again, the power of podcasting to be super niche. But we're actually testing out an AI podcast in that space where it's basically a recap of the news, but it puts it into a conversational format and saying, this is what happened this week. And we're getting some positive feedback there. So there's room for both. But I think the future is really what's going to happen because of all this feedback that people are giving about AI. And they're like, oh, I'm not sure if this content is AI or this content is a real person. Whatever we can do to humanize our approach, to humanize whether that's a podcast and then people are like, can leave messages and people are engaging and you can sense that the person is a real person, people are going to be hungry for more human to human connection. So I think if you can do that with your show, you've got personality, tell your story, you tell other people's stories. I think people are going to be wanting to hear more of that. There's a reason Joe Rogan is the number one podcast and his episodes are 3 hours long. People are listening. People love long form conversation because that's when you really get down to brass tacks. It's hard to BS on 3 hours. Like you have to say something meaningful, and I don't care who you are. And so, or at least if you want people to listen. So I think we're seeing more of these longer form conversations or people just like getting people to kick back their heels, relax, and share what's on their mind. And I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and we get these sound bites, and people would come, this famous person would come on TV, and you'd see them for 3 minutes, and they'd give you like a sound bite or like on the late night talk shows. And you're like, you don't get anything about from that. There's no meat on the bones there. There's no depth there. And so I've just been, as I get older, just conscious of focusing more on depth than breadth of like, how many people can I meet? As opposed to, there's a couple of people here and I'm going to go deep with them because that's really where you start to make true connections.
Yeah, I think that's really a good point too, using podcasting as a means of networking, right? I feel like podcasting is such a high leverage activity because I've got interviews that I did in 2016 that I'm still getting downloads on. And meanwhile, I'm here talking with you. And so it's a great way, like you talk about relationship building, both with your guests and your audience. I think that's not articulated and emphasized enough. Maybe we should add to that list of books, How to Win Friends and Influence People. That's such a powerful book. And I feel like it transcends cult. Like I've lived in Japan. I've been to Africa, Kenya, Uganda, Thailand, Australia. I'm in the Philippines now. I'm doing business in Singapore. I've been all over. And that How to Win Friends and Influence People stuff, it transcends
Classic.
cultures. That's such a powerful thing. I think those are great tips. Is there anything I haven't? I've got a couple pages of notes here, and I want to be respectful of your time. Harry, this has been a great interview. People may want to listen to it more than once to make sure they get all the gold nuggets out of this. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that I should have asked you about?
No, I think that's pretty well rounded, especially I got to mention my DJing as well, so that's always.
It's been good. And if people want to connect, if they want to continue the conversation, if they want to learn more, what are some of the best ways for them to get in touch and follow?
If they want to learn more about podcasting, there's a free video on my website, fullcast.co, and it's the 5 pillars every business owner needs to know before launching their authority building podcast. It's a nice free 20-minute video, and I went into depth about just really thinking through the process of what you need to be planning for. Because what I've learned is over the years, there's so much information out there, and everyone who starts a podcast after 1 year, they think they're a podcast guru, and there's like countless videos available, and it gets confusing for people. And one of the things I've always wanted to do is reduce like the tech overwhelm for folks. So that's a great intro video. And then I have a personal newsletter at harryduran.com. A life worth living. And it's like my personal journal. And I just share what's happening in my world, maybe a little story about my chickens in my yard, or that men's retreat I went on. I just share, like I said, the ups and the downs and the highs and the lows and a little bit of my entrepreneurial journey mixed in as well. But I think I'm truly passionate about sharing my story in the hopes that people will be inspired by it. Whenever I speak on stage, I'm not expecting like an extremely full room. If one person comes up after and they say, "Hey, thanks for that, that really resonated. I really needed to hear that." That's it. Just right. Affecting that one, making that one impact at a time.
Yeah.
I think if people thought more along those lines, I think we would all be in a better place.
I agree wholeheartedly with that. For so people that didn't get, that's fullcast.co, fullcast.co, or go here, check out harryduran.com, harryduran.com, harryduran.com. Harry, it's been an honor and a pleasure. You've been very giving. You've had great stories. Thank you for coming and sharing with my audience. And I know you've got your own shows, your own staff, your own chickens you could be tending to. Thank you for coming and sharing with all of us and helping us do better.
I appreciate this opportunity to share time with you, Daryl, and to share my story. It's always fun to think back sometimes, because sometimes as an entrepreneur, you're so go that you don't have time to look back. And even celebrating milestones, that's another thing to be important, because as entrepreneurs, we always focus on the things that go wrong. And if we look back, hey, how are we compared to 3 months ago or 6 months ago? And you start to say, hey, we're actually, things are not that bad. I think I appreciate any time I get an opportunity to slow down and just reflect on where I've been along this journey, because it's been a crazy wild one and a really fulfilling one. My life has changed because of podcasting. I can say that without a fact. And I can only imagine what type of conversation we'd be having 5 years from now on this show. So maybe we'll do that.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's put it in the books.